Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook on the Simply G Media Network. And I'm really excited to welcome to the program IndyCar racer Justin Wilson. Justin, thanks for calling, and thanks for taking the time, especially when you're getting ready to fly out and leave the beautiful weather in Orlando, right?
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, we just finished our Daytona 25 race here in Florida, so I'm actually sat at the airport right now. Sorry about the noise, but waiting to fly back home and chill out for a few days before the IndyCar season starts.
And that must be definitely a lot of fun. So tell our listeners a little bit of your background, and I really want to get into your story because it is definitely a tremendous story for our listeners, especially education-wise.
Yeah, I'm from England. I grew up there. I raced from 8 years old all the way through until I made it to Formula One. And then after that, I moved across the States and been here for the last 9 years. Love it in Colorado, which is where I'm living now. And kind of got involved with the Dyslexia Institute a couple of years ago and just trying to tell people my story and help out young kids and let them know that you can achieve your dreams.
So tell us specifically your personal story of dyslexia, because again, I know completely how difficult it is, especially I've worked with lots of learning disabled students and also children with dyslexia when it comes to reading, because of my tutoring and consulting company that I own and the struggles that they have. But tell us your personal struggle.
Yeah, I really struggled when it came to the equivalent of high school in the UK. I was, I think I was 12 at the time, and I was finding life very difficult, struggling to read, really struggling to spell. And, you know, I saw one teacher at the time was meant to be a bit of a specialist in dyslexia, because a few of my friends, you know, the friends I was hanging out with were all dyslexic, and they did a quick 10-minute exam on me and said, no, you know, you're just a little bit lazy, you gotta work harder. So I struggled on for the next couple of years, and it wasn't until I was, I think, 14 when my parents took me to the Dyslexia Institute in Sheffield, England, where I'm from, and got me tested independently, and they said, oh yeah, you're quite dyslexic. And that's when, you know, it started to get extra time in exams and help with things. I just couldn't understand the questions they were asking me. You know, if somebody read the question out, I was fine. But if I had to read the question, I could, you know, half the time I could read it, but I had no idea what it meant. The words just really weren't registering. I was reading them, but they weren't registering. And then the other half of the time, is I would read words, and I'd miss out the middle letters. So I'd read the first couple letters, read the last couple letters, and guess at the word. So I'd come up with a completely different sentence. So, my exams at school didn't go so well, but I started to get extra time, and that helped. Understanding that you got a learning difficulty helps, and then you can start to get, you know, people to support you and teach you a slightly different way. And I was told, I remember actually being at school, and, you know, you're 13 years old, and you go around the class asking, you know, what do you want to be when you're older? I was racing go-karts at this time. You know, that was my escape from everything. You know, the struggles I had at school was to go racing go-karts. But they went around asking everyone, what do you want to be when you're older? And I stood up and said, I want to be a racing driver. And half the kids burst out laughing. And you know, one guy at the back of the room shouts words, you know, you're too stupid to be a racing driver. And that always sticks in my mind, you know. Okay, I'm going to prove you wrong. And, you know, one is I'm not too stupid to be a racing driver. And secondly, I'm not stupid at all. It's, you know, just because I'm told to read and at that stage write doesn't mean that I'm stupid. It was a lack of education for him as much as, you know, as I was struggling. So, you know, that's why now I want to tell my story. I want other people to understand the differences and hopefully make it easier. And we all learn a different way. So it's finding a way that connects.
That most definitely a way that it connects in so many ways, Justin, and through that process of learning how to deal with this, how are you trying to help others in that same aspect? You were able to learn ways to overcome this. Now you are visiting public schools, and tell us a little bit about that story to try to help others, teachers, deal with dealing with kids with dyslexia and make sure that they're successful.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is, it's getting that information out and knowing that there's resources out there. The International Dyslexia Association is definitely a place to start and gather that information.
We're talking to Justin Wilson, IndyCar racer who has dyslexia and is helping bring awareness to the schools and talking to the kids. But one of the other cool things you're able to do is you meet up with families at IndyCar events of children that have dyslexia. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing there.
Yeah, like I said, we bring these groups down to the track. We show them around the car. I tell them my personal stories and some of the ways I struggled at school, and just listen to them a little bit. And you know, like I said, they seem to like the technology involved in IndyCar racing and the artistic side of the sport. So, you know, seeing their inspiration, or seeing the expressions on their face and seeing how it inspires them and some of the letters I've received afterwards is great. And hopefully, you know, they can go back to school, realize that they can achieve their dreams and keep applying themselves. Also come along, so you know it's great to speak to them and hear how you know they're just trying to find other people with similar problems who they can connect with and learn with.
It's definitely in so many ways, and working with the International Dyslexia Association, because again, you're able to bring your status as a racer and be able to bring awareness to other people about this as well. And working with that organization, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great place for people to start and gather information. There's lots of local institutes as well around the country. So the more awareness out, you know, that we can get out there, the better it's going to be. And you know, I've had so many letters and Facebook comments and things like that where parents have asking, you know, how can we get more information? What can we learn? And just sharing those resources. I mean, personally, you know, from the last 2 years, I found a different font for my computer that helps me read my emails a lot easier. And, you know, there's things out there that can help. And, you know, it's just finding the right tools.
Finding the right tools and also sharing with others your struggles, letting people know they have the opportunity, and working with organizations to raise money as well. So, Justin, a lot of things is helping also the International Dyslexia Association with fundraising as well, correct? Are you helping in that process?
Yeah, we actually did a helmet design contest. I think it was the end of 2012. And so anything like that where we can try and, you know, build together the recognition of the problem and also try and raise some funding. And, you know, the IDA is a great organization, and I'm just proud to be a part of that and try and help them.
Exactly. Again, we're talking to Justin Wilson, IndyCar racer, and you said now we're getting into the big season, the big opportunities. Tell us a little bit about what's happening with IndyCar racing. Now it's going to be starting up pretty big after you left Daytona. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we just finished at Daytona, which is the Daytona 24 Hours of Sports Car Race organized by a company called IMSA. So just finished that, and now getting ready for the main IndyCar season, which is what I do full-time. So the season kicks off on the 30th of March, and we go all the way through to the end of August. But for us, testing and preparation starts next week, and there's a lot of work to do between now and the first race. But, you know, obviously the highlight of our season is the Indianapolis 500. There's a lot of interest around that this year with possible new qualifying procedure, but also the introduction of the Indy Grand Prix for Indy cars. And that's at the beginning of May. So we've got a busy schedule coming up. It's going to be nonstop. Once the season starts, we're racing, you know, almost every weekend, but it works out about every other weekend. So a lot happening.
All right. Well, fantastic. Best of luck to you, Justin. And any way we can help out the International Dyslexia Association, we'd love to. So where can we find information on you, Justin, and learn more about you?
Well, my personal website is justinwilson.co.uk. And most of the links are there to get you through to whatever you need. So, you know, check that out. And, you know, just the best place is also on Twitter. You know, get a lot of questions through Twitter. Justin_Wilson gets you to me. And just the main thing is to ask the questions.
Well, absolutely. Well, good talking to you, Justin. Best of luck to you, and I know you'll have a successful racing season and keep helping the kids with dyslexia. So thanks for calling, Justin.
Thanks very much.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Spotlight Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And this is interesting, reminding me of the days, just talking about Mike and Mike in the morning on ESPN, and it's hilarious kind of looking back at things and how I kind of modeled certain radio styles and specific things. And this topic speaks to me for sure, especially I was a former professional wrestler that I don't know that our guests know that I was. And I had a few head injuries in my career in pro wrestling and played football for 1 year. And so I've dealt with a lot of these things. So it's really interesting. So I'm excited to welcome the program first, Christine Golick and Dr. Elizabeth Piroth. Dr. Elizabeth and Christine, thanks for calling. And how are you guys?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having us on.
Well, absolutely.
I'm doing well as well.
And exciting to talk to you. So let's go first with Christine. Again, you're involved in with youth football, and especially with our topic today is heads-up football. So tell me specifically enough, Christine, a little bit of your background for our listeners out there that aren't huge fans of Mike and Mike and know that Christine's husband is Mike Golick. But go ahead and tell your background.
Well, as you said, my husband is Mike Golick, and he co-hosts Mike and Mike in the Morning with Mike Greenberg. But prior to that, he spent 9 years in the NFL. And since we've been married for 28 years, we have three children, and we have two sons that played football. One son is currently in New Orleans Saints camp, but my other son called it a career last year. But they both went to Notre Dame and played football at Notre Dame. And then I have a daughter who's a swimmer. And she's in her last year at Notre Dame. So basically, I'm a mom, just like many of the moms that I talk to who have spent their life, you know, driving their kids around and spending time on the sidelines. So that's really why I got involved.
Definitely. And you see it firsthand for sure. And Dr. Elizabeth, how did you get involved working with Christine and kind of talking about heads up football and specifically head injuries in general and stuff? Tell us about how you guys know each other. Yeah.
I'm a neuropsychologist, and that means I work with people who have neurological illnesses and injuries, but my practice is solely concussion. So all I see all day long are kids and adults who have been concussed in various ways. And I've been doing this about 18 years, so it's been an interesting ride over this time. And I always say I got involved with USA Football. Chris and I are both on the National Advisory Committee for Heads Up because, you know, every day it seemed like somebody was coming up with some simple solution to concussions in football, their perception of a simple solution. And for years I've always said, we need to think more broadly. It's not simply just a better helmet or changing one rule, that we need to be looking at this injury from a comprehensive standpoint. And when USA Football was formed, I was very impressed, and I remain very impressed, with their approach to looking to this injury, of looking at equipment fitting, looking at rules, looking at style of play, technique, looking at other safety issues that are related to youth football and youth sports. I very happily supported that program. And part of it was starting a discussion with moms. As Chris and I always say, you know, the moms are often the decision maker, and we're the ones who are dragging our kids around to these sports. I have two sons, and they both play hockey, and my son, my 10-year-old, is actually playing football for the first time this year. And I play other sports, too, you know, basketball and swim and all those kind of things that kids do. But, I know that I see parents in my office every day who are just overwhelmed with information.
Yes, yeah.
About sports safety. And unfortunately, what I hear more is misinformation than accurate. And I feel very passionately about getting in front of moms in different contexts, like radio shows, to sort of try to disseminate accurate information, things that are evidence-based, so that we can all be on the same page about how to treat these injuries, how to manage them, how to protect them, how to prevent these injuries. And so Chris and I have done a number of clinics just having discussions with the mom, which they're great. I mean, Chris and I both love them. They're really fun to get in front of moms and have these discussions. And we do the same thing. I do a similar program in Chicago with hockey moms.
Interesting. So two areas where definitely the head injuries are out there. And Christine, I think that the situation with your husband played NFL football and your two sons played football as well, that lots of parents nowadays are afraid for their kids to play football. For example, where my wife teaches, they do no longer have a football program anymore, a Catholic school. And we're seeing more and more parents just saying, well, you know, forget about it. We're not even going to do this because we're just not learning how to stay safe, and we're afraid to get these kids involved in playing that sport. So we'll play another sport or things like that. Are you seeing that happening around in your area as well, Christine, where, you know, that people
there's definitely, you know, a fear, and a lot of it is, like Beth said, is not based in actual facts. And that's why we feel so strongly about going out and speaking to moms about just giving them information, because it's unfortunate that people are choosing for their kids not to participate in a sport rather than searching out the safest way possible for them to participate in a sport. Because, you know, one of the things that's really tragic nowadays is that kids aren't doing as many physical things as they used to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's creating a whole nother issue with obesity amongst children and whatnot. And all the good things that come from sports and being involved in the sports are being lost because kids aren't being a part of a team and, you know, learning about being a team and all the benefits of being on a team. So that's one of the real reasons that we're out there, is because we don't want people to stop playing because they're afraid. We want them to know that there are people out there that are making changes in the sports at the youth level to make the game as safe as possible. And, you know, we always say it's a contact sport, so their kids are going to get hurt. I mean, it's a part of life that your kids are going to get hurt, but it's what happens after they're injured and how they're treated and even how their injuries are prevented by following, like, the heads-up protocol that is making the difference. And we want parents to be aware of it and then base their decision on fact rather than just fear.
Now, go ahead, Dr. Elizabeth. Go ahead. Yeah.
I always want to add to that. Chris and I say all the time, listen, I have no interest in trying to talk a parent into letting their child play football or any other contact sport. That is not the incentive here.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is simply to allow parents to make informed decisions. And ultimately, if a parent decides that football or hockey or soccer or any other contact sport is not what's right for their child, what's not the best fit for their child, then that's fine. They're good for them. It's really, truly not about trying to, you know, sugarcoat the risks or, you know, sort of hide the risk from parents. We have honest discussions about the real risk of any particular sport, particularly for any particular child. It's really just helping parents kind of weed through all the information that's out there so they understand the actual scientific data and they can make an informed decision.
And making that informed decision is important, and that was kind of where I was going to go at. Dr. Elizabeth, is again, I've suffered some head injuries. I know in pro wrestling I have, and violent matches and different things like that. And I feel because I've constantly been able to, train my brain and continue to really study and read and do different things, I'm not seeing lots of head problems happen to me. I think, Dr. Elizabeth, it's a case-by-case basis. Instead of us all jumping to conclusions, what happens if a concussion, it's the end of the world. They're never going to be able to think right, and they're never going to be able to. It's the severity of them, isn't it, Dr. Elizabeth? It's not always. Go ahead. Yeah.
It is. It's just there's so many issues here that need to be sort of straightened out. And the media doesn't, unfortunately, do a good job, is that they conflate a lot of data. They really mix up, from one standpoint, they mix up more severe TBI, traumatic brain injury, things that where there's actual structural damage to the brain, or epidural hematomas and hemorrhages and those sort of things. Those are different types of injuries than a concussion. A concussion is a brain injury. No one's minimizing it. So sometimes when the media reports on research relevant to more severe traumatic brain injury, they will call it a concussion, and that gets very confusing for people. And there's also the difference between a single concussion, which we know that if properly managed, are people fully recover from, versus repetitive injuries and repetitive contact to the head. We also know that there are other factors that contribute to why one person may have sequelae from that same type of contact when someone else doesn't. And there's a lot of things here in the mix, and the media really, really confuses all those
Definitely.
Different issues. And then, therefore, confuses parents. So you get, and I see this in my office every day, you get kids who have one concussion and who seem to be having a normal recovery are incredibly fearful that they're now going to get, problems in the future. And there's no evidence of that. And so we need to make sure that we are staying up on the research that all, pediatricians, primary care docs, internal medicine docs, people who are seeing these kids in the front line, are also up on the research and also not getting a distorted image of the science from the media.
Well, and that's the truth. And then there's also, Dr. Elizabeth, and I'm going to go to Christine about this. I'm sure that your husband has had concussions in his football career and you've been able to been around him when it's happened, and your sons as well. Am I correct? And maybe even your daughter. Yeah.
Well, actually, that's funny that you say that, mentioning my daughter. My daughter, we believe, had a concussion because she swam into the bulkhead of a pool. So you
yeah.
think that swimming is a non-contact sport, but accidents can happen in almost any walk of life. But really, the thing that I have seen is the change in how concussions are addressed, even in the last 10 years. Obviously, the protocol is so different when my husband played. They basically held up a couple fingers, and if you were close, it was good. And that was where the problem, I believe, started coming in, because we weren't addressing it. Guys weren't sitting out. They weren't healing up. And then fast forward to when my sons were in high school, we were kind of on the cusp of knowing that they probably should be held out, but we didn't have any protocol in place for what to do if somebody sustained a concussion. And now spin it forward to today, where there's protocol in place in every state in the country as far as returning to play. And so that's been the great thing for me, is to see that we're making strides and that we're coming along and we're, addressing the issue and making things better for our youth.
And so would you say, Dr. Elizabeth, rest is the most important thing when having, for our listeners out there, if their children or as adults get concussions, that resting up is a big part of recovery so that you don't get multiple concussions?
So we need to define that a little clearer.
Yeah, sure.
One of the problems, Chris knows this, is an issue with me, is that, for years we've been telling people, based on solid science, that, immediately after a concussion, you need to take it easy. You need to dial it back. A day or two after school or work, sleep some more, avoid loud stimulation and excessive activity. But what's happened is that advice, again, based on science, has been extrapolated to crazy extremes. So you get this notion that you must do nothing. And, you know, you get this complete physical rest and don't do anything and don't think and don't move. And what we're getting is problems with that. Is that
right.
We're seeing kids are being kept out of school for an extensive period of time. It's a big problem. We see people are, you know, kept out of work, kept out of school, completely isolated for no good reason. And so in the last couple of years, there's really been some very good research looking at this. And what we see very clearly is that the first couple of days, absolutely, people should just sleep some more and take it easy and dial it back, is what I always tell people. But beyond the first few days, there's no evidence that, in fact, extended rest helps. And what we do see is that when they've actually empirically looked at this, that people who have been overly restricted, not only do they not get better, you know, than the people who just kind of moderate it, they also have other problems because we see a lot of anxiety with high school athletes as an example. Because we're keeping them out of school so long, they're getting overwhelmed. They're getting so lost in their classes and so backed up on work.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're getting depressed because they're being removed from their teammates and their classmates and their lives and their activities. And what also happens is when you limit their activity too much, what we see is that people become incredibly focused on their physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes sort of a vicious cycle that they become very hypersensitive to any sort of perception of change. And what we know is that people tend to do better in their routine. So the sooner you can get a kid back to school, a person back to work, we see actually that they recover better. Meaning, obviously, though, we don't say, you know, you got a headache, too bad.
Right.
But we say, okay, can we alter the environment, particularly the school environment, to lower the stimulation, to look at what triggers your symptoms, and can we reduce that to get you through the day? And obviously, we also then, you know, lower their sort of academic demands. We don't want them taking tests and quizzes and stuff while they're recovering. But it's not because of it. It's not because of a if you use your brain, you are making the concussion worse standpoint. It's because, you know, when someone's recovering from concussion, they have a very hard time focusing and remembering and learning, and we don't want their grades to be affected. It's not fair. So we want them in school. We want them around their peers. We just want them not to feel as bad while we allow them the normal recovery process. And so we really, you know, that's something that's a big issue in sort of the concussion community, if you will, is that making sure that we're giving treatment recommendations based on evidence-based medicine versus sort of an overreaction, because it's really a significant problem what we're seeing in kids these days.
And definitely, I can't believe I have another question for Dr. Elizabeth. I'm going to get Christine about heads up and talk about that for sure. But looking at when you said this, I've seen this firsthand. I mean, I think about the injuries I had, and I kept going on from wrestling, but I had a couple days off. It was not like when I was wrestling 6 days a week, we wouldn't do another hardcore match for another week. So it gave some time. We would be in the ring, but I wouldn't be having any head trauma for 2 to 3 or 4 or 5 days. But I kept doing everything else. When you kind of...
Go ahead,
Dr. Elizabeth.
But I want you to separate the difference between rest and return to activity that risk re-injury.
True, that's true. Yeah,
there's two separate issues here. Is that one, we want people to reduce their activity load and their academic load while they're recovering, but we absolutely do not want them to return to any activity that risk injury to the head until they're fully recovered. And you know, so it's good that you didn't return to wrestling for a couple of days, but you probably needed 2 weeks, not 2 days.
We're just like the pro football players where we just came out, put the helmet on. And I mean, I'm 42 years old, but still, I mean, honestly, I doubt many pro wrestlers are taking the time off yet, which is too bad. Hopefully they figure out the research and see things. And the one thing I wanted to ask you, Dr. Elizabeth, I was going to the major question, and that major question is, do you feel that we can heal from this? And that, so kid, let's say adults that have had many different just concussions, nothing that's like a severe brain injury, meaning can they come back? Can their brain still react and be as good as it was before? You see, like you, from your research of different NFL athletes or different athletes in general, do they come back and are able to do most of their activities at a normal way? That's why people are pulling them out. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. again, we need to make a distinction, okay? So the first question is, does someone heal from a concussion? And absolutely. We have 30 years of research that show us that when an injury is managed appropriately, and for us that means not returning to an activity that risks being hit in the head again, when someone is fully recovered, we know there aren't any permanent sequelae. All right. Different issue when you're talking about retired NFL players and their history of taking tens of thousands of hits to the head. Those are two separate issues, and that can be a whole entire other talk. But we're talking about the general situation when somebody has a concussion. Yes, they can heal. Now, there are certain people who will have persistent symptoms. They may have headaches longer than recovered, but that's typically due to the fact that there's something else going on in addition to the concussive injury. As example, we see a lot of people who have a neck injury. Because it's just the way we're built. You know, we have, always say we have big heads, little necks. So you get hit in the head, there's some contortion of the neck. And so we often see people who have an underlying neck injury that's causing the headaches. So oftentimes when you hear people are having persistent symptoms beyond that kind of normal recovery curve, which is about 1 to 3 weeks, we have to start thinking outside the concussion diagnosis and say, okay, what else is going on here that may be causing persistent symptoms? And that's getting back to this rest component, is that some of the problems that we see is that a lot of people are just told, oh, you're still having headaches, continue to rest. And that's not helpful, and you're also not getting to the core etiology of why they may be having those persistent symptoms. So there's a number of things that we look for when people are having persistent symptoms. And unfortunately, it often gets ascribed as, you know, post-concussion syndrome or related to the concussion. It may be certainly related to the injury, the actual contact of the head, but it may or may not be related to the concussion. So that's why you really want to make sure that if someone's not recovering as normal, that you're seeing a specialist or somebody who has that training to distinguish the reasons for persistent symptoms.
All right, let's get back to Christine and talk and ask about heads up football. It's very, very interesting what you're talking about. I could keep you on for hours just asking questions because parents tell me this all the time. And as a tutor and consultant, I see athletes all injured all the time. And then I also deal with interviewing NFL athletes. So there's definitely another topic to discuss, but there's related injuries, not just head injuries. Now, Christine, tell us about, again, heads up football and what you're doing as an NFL consultant on youth football. Tell us about that, Christine.
Well, Heads Up Football is a program that was developed by USA Football, and what it really does is promote educating the coaches about with proper tackling technique. I think that we've really gotten away, maybe in the last two decades, on what the fundamentals are. And basically, Heads Up Football isn't reinventing the wheel. It's getting back to the fundamentals and making sure they're taught correctly. But in addition to teaching, like, proper tackling technique, which is at the core of it, we're also teaching about concussion recognition and how to deal with it, heat and hydration, which is always a big issue, you know, especially at the high school and the youth level, and then sudden cardiac arrest. And then we're also teaching about proper equipment fitting, because if your equipment isn't fitting, then it's not going to protect you in the way that it was meant to. So it's really important that you know that the helmet fits and that the shoulder pads fit properly so that they're doing what they're designed to do. And we're reaching out. We have so many groups that have joined up. It's been amazing in the last two or three years. There's like over a million players that have been involved in the Heads Up Football program and 6,300 youth organizations. And the great thing about it is it's going from the youth organizations all the way on up through the college level.
Great.
And one of the beauties of it is that is what they're going to be taught at 8 years old is going to be what coaches expect them to know at the college level. It's going to be uniform, and you're going to see better structure because of that, because all the coaches will be on the same page as far as what they're teaching and what they expect to see from the kids. So that's really what it is, and it's been well-received. I think the football community, you know, it's been long overdue for some direction, and they really embraced the program.
Wow, that's great, Christine, and that's getting you out talking to people and stuff, and I'm sure parents are concerned all the time about this, right, when they're getting their kids involved in youth football.
Sure are. That's why we try to reach out to as many people as we can. We've held clinics in every one of the NFL cities, and they're branching out. I was just in Sioux Falls, South Dakota over the weekend with a youth group out there who held a clinic for moms, and we're just basically letting them know what the Heads Up Football program is doing for their kids so that they understand what we're trying to do.
And Dr. Elizabeth, being involved on the border, being part of USA Football Heads Up Advisory Committee, what kinds of help do you provide for the organization? Some of the stuff we've been talking about.
You know, absolutely, exactly what Chris said is that we need coaches to be all talking the same language. Is that youth football coaches are volunteer. These are good people who are giving their time to give back to the community and the kids. But unfortunately, sometimes they teach football the way they were taught, and that may not have been the safest way to teach these techniques. So we need everyone to be focused on safety, not just from concussions, but like Chris said, heat and hydration, sudden cardiac arrest. We need parents to understand these injuries because a youth football coach cannot watch every kid.
Yes.
And we want parents to know these signs and symptoms of concussion so they can say, something's not right with Johnny. Someone should take a look at him. And same thing with the players. We need them to know what the symptoms they may be experiencing if they may be concussion. But we also need them to be able to observe those signs in their teammates. Everybody has to be, educated here. And so that's the thing with USA Football and why Chris and I do so much is that it's really about just making sure that everyone feels armed and prepared and educated so they can make these decisions. We all want our kids to be healthy and active and happy, and sports provides a lot of those things for them, but there are risks, and we want to try to lower the risk with the best science and the best technique and the best education to everyone involved in youth football. And I think that the USA Football is going about it the right way. It's an evolving process. Things change as our understanding changes.
Yes.
No one says that we have all the answers. But, I get frustrated when people just sort of complain. It's like, well, you know what? Let's try to be part of the solution here. And that's what Chris and I and so many, many, many other really good people across the country are working very hard to try to keep our kids safe in all sports. Because I can tell you, I spend all day, every day with people who are concussed, and it's certainly not just football. I had a patient yesterday who was kicked in the face by swimming.
Well, there you go.
I've hit everything imaginable, field and track, and everything that you would think is not a concussion sport. I've hit tennis and all those things. So, it's really about looking at how our kids play these games, how they're taught these games and these sports, and can we study them to figure out ways how they are hurt, how we can lessen those injuries. And that's what's really exciting about this focus on concussion is that, we're talking about it, but we're also studying it. I mean, they look at film and they figure out how are people actually injured, and can there be rule changes, equipment changes, technique changes that, in fact, lower that risk.
Now, Christine, what advice would you offer moms, especially if they think that their child has a concussion? What warning signs, and then for as a mom looking at this and as a parent, it's not a doctor looking at this, what advice would you offer, Christine? And I'll ask the same question for Dr. Elizabeth. Yeah.
We often say is that your child the best. So if you see, he or she behaving out of character, or something like Beth said, that a coach can't watch every child on the team 24/7, but you have interaction with your child, you know how he operates, you know his behavior. So if you see anything out of the ordinary that seems worrisome to you, by all means get it addressed and don't feel silly, I'm sure there's nothing wrong or it's all right. It doesn't hurt to be preventative and get it checked out. So I always feel like, better to err on the side of caution. Especially with something that you can't see. Like, that's the thing that makes head injury so tricky is like a broken arm, you obviously can see it. A twisted ankle, you can see it. A head injury, you obviously can't see what's going on inside the head. So I always tell parents, it's better to err on the side of caution if you see something that's not right to you with regards to your child. I mean, it's your child, so
definitely.
No one knows him better than you. So,
anything else to add, Dr. Elizabeth, to what Christine said?
Oh, that's no. And Chris is right. And I tell people all the time, go with your gut. I never want to devalue the instinct of a mom. Right. Absolutely. But what we tell people is that, you know, the signs of a concussion are those things that are observable by other people. So this is where we want coaches and parents to be involved. So when a kid looks, you know, wobbly, we could, you know, the kid who's getting up after a hit and has poor balance, the kid who's slow to respond, the kid who looks confused, the kid who is can't recall what just happened, and the symptoms are those things that the athlete themselves report, and that's headache, dizziness, nausea, sensitivity to light or to sound, feeling out of it, feeling foggy. So those are the kind of things that you want parents to understand, that those can be indicative of a concussion, not that they mean they had a concussion, because we also want to make sure that we're properly diagnosing these injuries.
Definitely.
So, you know, we want parents to know what to look for, what questions to ask their children to say, hey, should I go get this looked at? You know, should I take into the emergency room, or should I call my pediatrician or my primary care doc? So it's simply a matter of saying, hey, this is what you want to look for. It's the same thing with things like heat and hydration, is that we need them to understand that the symptoms that are suggestive that they that their core body temperature is probably high, dangerously high.
All right, so Chris.
And the beauty of it is, too, that kids are being – because of the programs, kids now are understanding what the symptoms and signs are, and they're with their teammates, and they understand if they see erratic behavior. And we're seeing actual teammates saying, you know, coach, I don't think so and so is looking good or feeling right, and they're actually understanding what to look for, and that's also important as well.
90 seconds.
Okay, Chris, where's the best place we can find information on you on Heads Up Football and all the different places? What's the best place we can go for our listeners to check everything out that you guys are talking about?
Well, we always tell people to go to usafootball.com, and I know Beth always says to go to the CDC for their medical information, for the most solid medical information. But those are two of the best places, don't you think, Beth?
Oh, absolutely. USA Football, the website, and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, / concussions, has a solid program. And, you know, I tell people go to the CDC because there's information that is regularly updated, and there's information for coaches, for parents, for physicians, for kids. And you can, you know, if you're a teen mom and you want some information, you can get pamphlets that see for free that you can distribute, you know,
fantastic
posters that you can put up.
Well, fantastic. Thanks, Dr. Elizabeth and Chris, for coming on the program. Take care, guys, and best of luck with all the great ventures you're doing. And Chris, definitely tell Mike and Mike how much I like their show and how much I learned about radio from them.
I will.
Okay. Well, thanks.
I will
again.
Do that.
All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care, guys. All
Bye-bye.
Right. That was the Total Spotlight Show.
Bye-bye.
Take care. We're going to be live in about 10 seconds.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye. 10 seconds.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, Toltutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Toltutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Toltutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, Neil Haley, and also at Periscope. And I'm excited to welcome the program two-time All-Pro Davin Joseph, Davin's Dream Team, Davin Joseph segment. Davin, thanks for calling, and I always enjoy our conversations.
I always have fun, too. It's always pretty good with me. Well, always very good with me.
Well, thank you. And so I decided to go. It's interesting. I love talking college football and the amazing stories of college football. And I guarantee in every locker room in the NFL every day, during especially the day before a game on Sunday, everyone's touting their college football team, aren't they, Davin? Saying,
well, it depends on where you went to college. You know, so some teams that may be in a drought or going through some tough times, they may not talk as much trash. But, of course, you got guys that went to, like, schools like Alabama, guys that went to Florida. I can't say UM in that sentence. More like Ohio State. Oh, yeah, you know, the shirts are out, the shirt shorts and everything else. All the apparel's out Friday or Saturday. And, of course, you know, always a couple friendly bets, and especially if you have a head-to-head.
Exactly, for sure. And when you talk about the tradition in Oklahoma, when you chose Oklahoma, I'm sure you looked at that tradition of the Sooners for sure when you made that decision, especially football-wise, the amazing atmosphere and everything.
Great place to play. You know, you have that that small town where everything really goes around the university, especially around the football team. Rich tradition of winning championships, very successful players. And when I played at Oklahoma, they were coming off of a national championship and on the rise, young head coach in Bob Stoops, and just an exciting atmosphere to play. And it's really just all about being the best student athlete you can be. It's just a great place to really focus on, you know, the task at hand, but of course enjoy that college experience and enjoy, you know, playing at a high level.
So you're talking about Bob Stoops, Coach Stoops, and making the decision to go to Oklahoma. Tell us about the program, the years that you played with them. How did they compete? Were they? I put a picture up of you celebrating, I think, a Big 12 championship win. So, or it was a bowl win, I forget, with your teammates from Oklahoma. That's what I put as a picture for today's show. But tell us specifically some of the how much you were winning when you played at Oklahoma.
Oh shoot, we were at the top of the charts. My first 3 years there at Oklahoma. Competing in two national championships, we unfortunately lost. Winning several Big 12 championships, and really seeing a lot of guys have success on the field, off the field, and at the next level. And so, you know, I was blessed to be able to play with guys like Adrian Peterson, Jamal Brown,
wow,
who I played with for a long time, Tommy Harris. And the list goes on and on and on. Jason White, Heisman Trophy winner, and just first round picks, draft picks. I believe 1 year we actually had 14 guys drafted. And so talent, you know, we were just talented, very, very talented. But in addition to be very, very talented, they're just very, very disciplined. And Bob Stoops ran a great program where discipline was our focus, and routine was necessary. And so we were able to see guys have, like I said before, have success on the field, off the field, and also on the next level. And so it was just a great time to be a Sooner.
It seems like it was definitely a great time to be a Sooner, to win that much and that winning tradition. And so how crazy was your home field advantage going in Norman, Oklahoma? Right, Norman, right? Yes.
And Norman's one of those places very hard for people to come in and win. And so I think I might have lost one time at home during my college career. And so it's one of those places where they call it Sooner Magic. You know, we just always find a way to win, and not just win, but dominate. And so at the home game atmosphere is just, it's loud and it's in your face, and it's very, very hostile. And that's a good word for it. Very, very hostile for anybody else that's coming into our place to play. And so we were able to win consistently at home, week after week, year after year. And I still believe probably, you know, I could be wrong, but I believe our home win percentage is probably, I would guess, top five in NCAA football, Division I.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about Oklahoma and pretty much walking around that campus, you're a rock star, right, being with the Sooners. That's for sure. That program in that city, in that town, it's like probably like an NFL atmosphere, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I think it's better than most NFL cities, actually. Because, you know, once you're a Sooner, you're always a Sooner. And so you see people from that played in the 70s and 80s and 90s that are still recognized and celebrated throughout Norman. And you're able to see guys that come to Norman and they still live in Norman. And Norman's a small town, but it's just that friendly of a place for just about anybody. But once you're a Sooner, you're always a Sooner, and it's just, you see guys come to Norman from wherever, California, Texas, Florida, and then they make Norman their home.
And how many seats did the does the stadium seat? How many?
You put me on the spot with that one there.
Because you know Penn State's like 110,000, Michigan's a certain amount. Were you getting 80,000 or more?
Yeah, I don't even think we're to 80 yet. You know, we're still relatively small when you compare it to some of those monster stadiums like Ohio State and Tennessee and Michigan. We're creeping up to the 80 to 100,000 range, but we're not quite in the big boy league yet.
All right. So, and basically, your highlights were probably going to those national championship games, and being the BCS championship game must have been amazing, right? The coverage, the press, the leading up to those games.
And a lot of people complain about the BCS and how it's set up and whatnot. And I think it's always people who don't get in that complain. But I really think it's set up. It's a good setup. And now we have, of course, they have the college playoff now.
Yeah.
That was a great success this past year. But that the BCS is a great experience. It's the top tier of all, of course, college football. It's the biggest show is the big. They are the biggest collection of games, and everybody strives to get to that point. And you really see they're doing a good job now, and they've always done a good job of really making sure that the people that are putting in the work, from the coaches to the players, and of course the schools, to highlight them and really celebrate their success. And so, it's a great experience, and it's something that, you'll never forget.
Well, definitely. It sounds like it, and always a Sooner. So what do you think Oklahoma's going to do this year? What's your prediction for Oklahoma?
You know, I'm biased, and so, of course, I'm always going to say we're going to win the national championship. But we have a very good young quarterback. Of course, we have a great head coach. Defense played wonderful last year. We had some hiccups last year where we didn't finish as well as we started. But I really feel like this year is going to be a great year for them, being that they're consistent from the beginning of the season all the way to the end. And I definitely think we can find a place in the college football national championship in the fall.
And what do you think of the rivalries that you never were, but you look at the history of Oklahoma with Colorado and Nebraska and seeing them no longer in the same conferences? I mean, if you look at the history, I miss those rivalries.
And people always...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's one rivalry, Oklahoma-Nebraska, that needs to be an annual thing.
Yes.
Oklahoma-Texas, of course, is a big one. Oklahoma State. Then, you of course, you have Oklahoma-Nebraska. You look at the history of that rivalry, the success between both schools, and you kind of scratch your head, why aren't we playing that game? And so I think it's on Oklahoma and Nebraska, of course, to try to find a way to make that a part of their annual schedule. And we don't want to see that great of a rivalry slip away.
Definitely don't want to see that great of a rivalry slip away. And if for people who want to see that unbelievable, that 30 for 30 on Brian Bosworth in Oklahoma, that's what it's showing about, again, the tradition of the Sooners for sure. And I'm hoping to have Brian on in August to get to talk to him. But then there goes, again, that continued tradition of Oklahoma. Now, any news to report, Davin? Anything else? I know you can give us some news on the foundation, but any other news to report to us right now?
No other big news to report. So for me, everything's staying steady. Foundation is definitely the focus right now. Just had a successful event with in partnership with D1 here in Tampa, Florida.
Right.
Giving away free physicals to some young student athletes. From all ages, from youth football all the way, well, youth athletes, I just call them youth athletes, so those cheerleaders are also, up to high school student athletes. And we had a good turnout, even though the weather was was not traditional Tampa weather. So very, very rainy, big storms coming through. But we still had a great turnout, great partnership. And so that's the biggest news I have right there. Other than that, we have another event coming up in partnership with Samaritan's Feet in a back-to-school effort in which we're giving away shoes to some students in need here in the Tampa Bay area.
So when you have some news, you'll let us know for sure. I just always have to ask that question as I was... Yeah.
110% sure I will let you know first, Neil.
And then are we going to be hearing something soon that will be coming up that you can't release it yet, do you think?
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, especially that time of year. Well, I'm just keeping up, and, you know, I'm going to be just checking things out, and I'm just searching and just figuring out, because I consider you a friend of mine now, Davin, so I'm thinking of you and praying for you to have the right opportunity, so... Just wanted to tell you that.
I appreciate it, Neil. And ever since, you know, we started talking on the phone, it's been nothing but an awesome experience.
Well, that's great. So, again, best place to find information on you, Davin, to go to where?
DavinsDreamTeam.org.
All right, Davin. Well, good luck. And I'm waiting on information. And you could tweet me out once you first hear this news, wherever it happens, because you know, and I hope that sometime you'll ever be in Pittsburgh so we can have a coffee and kind of sit down and talk and meet each other face to face. That would be pretty cool. So we never know when that will happen. So, yeah, so we'll wait and see. Exactly. So best of luck, Davin. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Easy enough, Neil. Thank you, man.
All right. Take care. All right. That was the Total Celebrity Show. You can go to my website, Total.